for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 638 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's time for another great doubleheader week in episode 638 as I talk with Sandy King Carpenter from Storm King Comics, and then Jeff Haas returns to talk the end of all Terminus 1 and 2 on Kickstarter. Everything kicks off with my fun interview with Sandy King Carter, who heads Storm King Comics. Here's how this group is described. Along with her husband, director John Carpenter, Sandy King focuses on bringing the best writers from the worlds of comics, movies, and novels to bring their special brand of horror and sci-fi entertainment to comics. We talk about who produced the excellent comics they're making, including the very soon-to-be-released second volume of the Fetch series for younger readers, as well as Long Haul from Cullen Bunn and Heath Amodio. As well as explore what else is coming soon from these high-power creators. Be sure you pick up the first and second volumes of Fetch from your local comic shop or through the Storm King Comics website. Then it all concludes with the return of Jeff Haas, who has a new Kickstarter underway for the first and second issues of The End of All Terminus. Here's the description. The universe is dying. The Great Rip is tearing it apart. Now the seven sentient species in the universe attempt a daring escape aboard the spaceship Terminus. However, these species' existence together is anything but harmonious, as each vie for control. Only a few will survive in the end. Jeff catches us up on the latest Terminus news and other crowdfunding events. Then we discuss how this story came to be, who the characters are, and what else Jeff has heading our way in the months ahead. Be sure to back this Kickstarter before it concludes on May 4 at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get through in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Sandy King Carpenter is an American film producer and businesswoman who is known for In the Mouth of Madness, Village of the Damned, Vampires, and Ghosts of Mars, all of which were directed by her husband, John Carpenter. Sandy is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Storm King Productions and its division, Storm King Comics, which is why we're talking with her today. She co-created the comic series Asylum, in which Carpenter is also involved. How's it going, Sandy?
It's going great. Where am I talking to you from? I mean, I'm talking to you from Hollywood. Where are you?
I'm in Florida.
Aha.
So we're both in temperate climates at this time of the year, because really good stuff. Now I'm really interested. I've watched a couple of other interviews you've done, so there's information I'm interested in. As I mentioned before we started recording, I'm always thinking that people who are involved in the visual arts, like movies and television, make better comic producers because they think visually. Do you think that's true, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
Well, I think the reason we do well in comics is we're used to working in teams. And I found that comics are also really good well-functioning as team players. I brought more of my movie experience to comics and kind of shocked everybody because they were used to being isolated in the bigger companies where everybody only goes through one editor. And in the way I put our comics together, I have from the get-go, I put everybody in touch with each other. And I think it makes for a more coherent, more cohesive comic. In terms of thinking visually, I've always thought visually, and I originally came from a fine arts background and animation.
Uh-huh, very good. And you've been a producer, director, all kinds of good things with that. And so I think that helps, too, because you know how to coordinate a team, which I think is very useful, particularly in the comics industry. There was something you were talking about in one of the interviews I watched a while back on Sci-Fi Wire. The lady that was interviewing was asking about what, you know, being a woman in this industry, because, you know, let's be honest, for me to get to talk to a woman who understands comics is a great and wonderful experience, I have to tell you. I talk to guys every day of the week if I want to. But to talk to a woman who gets it, it was like when my friends and I used to sit around and talk football during lunchtime. There was a lady that was there. Her sons were big into football, and she realized if she ever wanted to talk with them, she was going to have to learn football. So she sat and learned that. So she'd sit with them and talk football with them. And when she came to work, she would sit around with the guys, and we would all talk about football. And she was the most popular lady in the place because lunchtime, we all struggled to be able to sit with her so we could talk football with her. And so I'm just kind of interested because there still aren't as many women, I think, as there should be in the comics industry. And you came in right at the top, you know, running the organization and coming into comics. As a woman in the comics industry, what's been your reaction to it, and how do you think you've been received?
Oh, I was looked at with great suspicion because they thought that I was coming from the movie industry to rape and pillage their precious comics, and they didn't look at me as a creator. But what I didn't know was that I was the first woman founder of a comic publishing company. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and it was a journalist who informed me I was. And the only thing I could think of was, well, that's kind of sad. And the other thing was maybe the other women were smarter and they didn't have to pay for the companies they worked in. It took a while mostly just to get people who thought maybe we were coming in to do a one-shot vanity comic. And it took a while to prove that wasn't what we were doing. I mean, originally, we didn't necessarily plan on having an ongoing publishing house that published lots of different, as you say, lots of different imprints for different subjects. But, we dug it and stuck around. And I think that the longer we stuck around and the high quality of our, literally the paper, trying to make things that people considered precious and wanted in that collection under the bed, it managed to win over a lot of the old guard who at first just ignored me.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting also, to me. Go ahead.
Well, also I pay on time.
Okay, good. Well, there was one, the lady I was listening to interviewing, you asked if you felt that it was important to promote women in the industry. And I loved your answer. You said, if they're good.
Yeah.
I thought that was a wonderful response because you said that it's not that they're there, it's that they're good at what they do. And I think that, unfortunately, that's how women in the industry bubble to the top is how good they are. Not that they're women, because I've read some really wonderful stuff done by female creators that I just thought, you know, frankly, outshines a lot of the other comics that are coming up this day.
There always have been. I mean, there are women in comics, Louise Simonson and Amanda Dibert and various other Kat Staggs, who are extraordinary. Most of the people always thought Kat Staggs must be a guy because she drew so well. It's like, oh, where the hell did you come from? Louise did X-Men the Apocalypse. So, you know, I think it's just about short-sightedness on people looking at us as opposed to what we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the success you've had, too, I think, does wonderful things, not only for women in the industry, but the horror industry, because a lot of companies are trying to avoid the long johns, the superhero stuff, and are going into horror. But from the stuff that I told you before, one night I got to sit and read a lot of the books that you were doing. And I made the mistake of reading it just at nighttime, just before bed. And I had trouble sleeping that night because, wow. That haunted my thoughts for the whole rest of the night. because you can, like, the groups they sent me are 13 Horsemen is one, Death Mask, and then the Fetch series that's coming out, Grimmstown, Tales for a Halloween Night. The one that I became affiliated or understood your books was the Long Haul graphic novel. I interviewed Cullen Bunn, and a couple of weeks later, I got to talk with his co-creator, Imodio. And God, that was a good book. That was a really terrific thing. Like, that got me so interested in the stuff that you do and stuff. So there's also Vortex, Usher Down. I'm sure I'm missing a whole bunch of stuff and under the imprints and stuff. But wow, there is just so many good things that you guys have done in what I feel like is a short amount of time. And I think just outclasses so many of the other horror books. It just, gosh, scary as can be. I mean, particularly Long Haul scared the heck out of me. I'm not sure I want to make a long car trip anymore because, wow, that was a scary book. So you guys have done an exceptional job at scaring people in the visual medium of comics. And I just wanted to say congratulations because, wow, I've read a lot of horror comics in my day, but these are some of the very best I've ever read.
Well, thank you. And I think part of that's that I take horror very seriously. You know, it's an allegorical medium. And I want you to come away still thinking about it the next day. And I want it to speak to some element inside you that you wind up thinking about. And the fact that, you know, Long Haul is... has its foundation in reality. Death Mask was one where I read about a situation down in Mexico where the police thought that two gangs were, that a gang was wiping its rivals out and killing them one by one, and then found out it was the mother of a girl who'd been raped and murdered. And she killed the gang one by one. So, you know, there's nothing quite as frightening as reality.
Boy, and your books transport me there. You know, when I start reading the books, I'm lost. And Frank Miller once said he opened a Batman comic and he fell in. And that's my experience with your books. I'm not in my house sitting and reading a book. I am there watching this truck chase after another truck on the road, and I'm going, ooh, this is scary stuff, because it's just so well done. And you're right that it's enough reality in there that it pulls me in. And I want to talk about, because there's a book of yours that's going to be coming out shortly, the Fetch series. I think it's the second one is going to be out before long.
That's Mike Sizemore and David Kennedy, and they do an extraordinary job of, you know, what we consider appropriate for 8 to 12 year olds. In Storm Kids, we're not trying to terrify little kids. You know, that would be mean, but we try and address their fears so that they have a way to work them out. And he did a great job of getting that. The fear of death, the fear of separation, the fear of what comes beyond, and putting it in a very good tale, I thought.
Oh, it's so well written. There's a surprise that comes up in the second book that I was really stunned when I came across it. The whole story centers around a girl who's lost a dog. And, you know, the dog has passed, and she really feels badly about that. There's a big surprise in the second book that when I got to it, I was just, I gasped out loud when I saw what was happening. So it's so well written and so well done. I wanted to say that as far as like a kid's line, you couldn't have picked a better time to do a kid's line than right now. Because if you go like into the Target stores and Walmarts and stuff, they have whole sections devoted to kids books and, you know, YA books and stuff like that. So I was just thinking this couldn't have been done at a more appropriate time than right now. So, wow, congrats on that.
Thank you. I just felt that there weren't enough that really tried to address their fears instead of just be spooky or comedy.
Mm-hmm. It's just great because there's some of them with dragons and some of them with other stuff. And I'm always intrigued by it because, you know, you're right. You can't scare kids too much or it's bad stuff. But I think this just walks the line so that even I as an adult enjoyed reading the books. So if you want to get them for your kids, I highly recommend them for your kids. But if you're an adult that's kind of interested in this kind of storytelling, I buy a lot of YA books to read. And I have to say that Fetch is a terrific YA or kids book. So even if you're an adult, I would recommend getting this book because it's such an excellent series. Just well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just great stuff. Now the second book I think is coming out. Is that the end of the Fetch series? Are there other ones coming? Do you know?
Sizemore just told us in the last 2 days that he may have a third one in him. And if he does, ooh, I'll take it.
Oh boy. I'd like to see that. Cause boy, there's so much I could spoil in this book, but I don't dare because I want other people to enjoy it like I did. Just a well-done book, and a great series. And I have to say, you know, we talked about women creators and stuff. Your books also are going with some way that I think is really important right now is to have a female lead character. And the Fetch book, it's a girl that's the main character in the story. And I always tell people, I have read male lead characters for decades, so I have a very clear idea where I know the story is going to go very shortly. When you put a female or a girl in there, I don't know what's going to happen next. And so I like that. I like to be surprised. So I just think that is such a wonderful thing. Like the girl that's in Fetch, she's really great. I really like her because she shocked me and surprised me every step of the way with what she did. Just well done. Just excellent choice of characters and use of them.
Good. It's how we like it.
It's so great to see that. So, because I've noticed there are a lot of the books, and of course, Long Haul was not that way. The main there were two guys, but there was a sister involved, and there was a big surprise with that too. That's another thing about you guys' books that I really like. I love being surprised, and every book has at least one shocking surprise in it along the way. So I just love the way that is. I think. You know, I always think that horror can be divided in a couple of different ways. There's like terror and there's suspense and there's dark stories and stuff like that. And no matter which path you guys choose, you always have a really nice surprise in there. So I sit there and go, wait a minute, I didn't see that coming. But it makes perfect sense. I love that kind of stuff. So I think that you guys are doing a wonderful job on that. I wanted to ask you because I saw in that interview where you were talking, and I don't know if you want to tell the story again of how you got into comics. There was a really interesting tale where you were talking with somebody about something that was going on, and comics got involved. Do you want to talk that story again?
Well, that was how we wound up doing our very first comic. There was we were supposedly developing a television show at a studio, and we were in partnership with Thomas Ian Griffith, John, and myself. And, you know, I just had that funny feeling when you're pretty positive you're not really going to make this series. They just want to put out press releases and talk about it. And at a certain point, and it was the story that eventually became the comic book Asylum. And they were going on about, can't this be made in a sleepy little town? And, you know, I finally looked and I said, look, this is where Lucifer comes through in the City of Angels, is kind of a putting down God to show him what he can do. And, it's supposed to be hell on earth in Los Angeles during the Santa Ana winds. And they said, well, it's not like you're matching to a graphic novel or anything. And I don't know. It just occurred to me that yeah, we are. Because we'd always done artwork to sell various projects and to give a flavor to what we're presenting. And we walked out and, you know, everybody turned around and said, what the hell are you saying? I said, we're going to do a comic book. I don't want to hear this anymore. They're not going to make this. And I came home and he asked me, so how'd it go? And I said, great, we're doing a comic book. And he said, what do we know about comics? I said, absolutely nothing. We'll learn. And we spent 2 years researching the art and the business of comics before we put out our first comic, Asylum.
Yeah, that's just amazing to me. It's wonderful stuff about that. Because, you know, again, you started with the visual medium and it moved into the comics. Because the best artwork moves you from panel to panel and your brain fills in the extra stuff. And that's the things about I think the artwork particularly does that to me. In my head, there's a movie going on as I'm reading the pages and the panels, because the way that's told and not only the scripting, but the artwork makes my brain fill in the blanks and go in and just, I am there watching this take place as if I was really there. So I think you guys do a wonderful choice of the writers. And I also think the artwork is just spectacular too. So how do you go? Cause I mentioned it. I saw in the one interview, we talked about that you knew people, comics creators who were generous with their time and helped you get into the industry. Some, how do you go about choosing like a story? Do people submit stories to you and then you kind of pick them out? How do you pick artists and stuff like that? How do you put a comic together?
Well, I go hunting. They don't really come to me. Mm-hmm. I know who I think are good writers and I pull them from being novelists, screenwriters, and comic writers. And people I really respect who I think can do good stuff. And then I get them drunk and con them into first maybe writing a short story for the Halloween Nights anthology. Mm-hmm. Get their feet wet with comics. Team them up with an artist who has a sensibility I think will go with them if they're not from the comics world. And that helps, little steps for little feet, getting them into having their story, because it's 50% the art and 50% the words. And then with the guys that are real experienced comic writers, I ask them who they like working with. And then we bring in the Storm King aesthetic. I have a real cinematic penchant where I like to put something out there that everybody else isn't doing. So I think Storm King has definitely got a different look to its comics. And I try and find who meshes with the stories. And it's like matchmaking. You put together a team you think will be great. It's mm-hmm. a little like casting a movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, all this kind of comes back to the movie and TV industry somehow in my head, because I think your experience doing that has helped you be a success in Storm King Comics. I just think it's really helped. I wish more people had that experience, because I think it makes a huge difference in the quality of the storytelling. And that's why I think your comics are so gripping. Once I started, I couldn't put it down kind of stuff. So it's really, really good. If somebody was to come to you and say, I heard about Storm King Comics, which books do you think I should read so I can learn about what kind of things that you guys offer? What books would you recommend to them?
Well, it depends what their tastes are. I usually ask them, do you like short stories or do you like novels? Do you like, in movies? Do you like horror or science fiction? If they like short stories, I recommend the Tales for a Halloween Night anthology series, because it's like a box of chocolates of horror. There's no story over 13 pages. So for me, that's a good one to settle in at night before bed. And see different, there's no two stories alike in each book. If you're somebody that really likes to follow the characters along and read something longer, I'd suggest starting with one of my books, Asylum. And that's a real angels and demons, more existential horror. And if it's somebody that likes science fiction, is a big fan of The Thing, I would suggest Mike Sizemore's two-volume set of Vortex. And that's fun. It's real isolation in space.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Right now, there was one thing I heard you were talking about in an interview where you talked about the fact that the Tales for a Halloween Night comes out around Halloween. And, you know, over the years, as I've talked to people, and they put out horror books, but they don't, they want to put it out in the middle of the summer. And I'm going, you know, this book would be better if it would come out around Halloween, because that's when mm-hmm. people are in the mood for this kind of stuff. So when I heard you talking about that, I was like, that is so smart, because I wish I had got paid for every time I told somebody this should come out around Halloween. I'd make some serious money about that. So I think that you guys are approaching this very smartly, and I just think that that's so great. Now, it's interesting, too. I was looking at Tales of Science Fiction, and I was intrigued because I'm more of a science fiction guy. But you know, a lot of the science fiction stories to me were more along the lines of, let's wait and see what's going to happen and be surprised because there's things we don't understand along the way. And I like that. I like, as I've said probably several times already, I like being surprised. And I thought the science fiction tales, like the Redhead, were very surprising to me. Something would come along and I'd go, oh, that makes perfect sense, but I had no idea that was coming.
Ray Swierczynski, who wrote Redhead, is an exceptional writer. And he writes nonfiction, fiction, novels, noir thrillers, and comics. And so he's the one I got to handhold David J. Scow into comics, because Scow wanted to get in on the party, and he'd never written a comic. And so Scow helped, Swierczynski helped him. So, you know, you kind of set up that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I first came across Dwayne's work back when, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, they had the Dark Circle and Red Circle comics from Archie. They had superheroes from the 60s, and he took over the Black Hood.
Yep.
And he turned the Black Hood into this, instead of being this guy that rode around on a metallic horse that flew through the air, which I never got, he turned him into this city, dark Avenger kind of person. That when that they stopped making those, that was the one I missed the most, because his book was really sharp and really, you know, very, very realistic, but at the same time, superheroic in a lot of the aspects to it. So he was a great choice to write that book, I have to say.
Yeah, he can do dark really well.
It reminds me, you said that interview, and I keep referring to that interview, but it makes me laugh. You said that one thing that people tell you when you have a really good story is that it's too dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a huge kick out of that because I've seen so many times, you know, now probably not as much as it used to be, but all the darker stuff would come out and I'd be like drawn to it. But now I think, you know, you said after Breaking Bad came out, a lot of that kind of changed. Do you still think that that's true? Do you think that people still think that it's something is too dark?
Yeah, but it goes in cycles. And it's like after 9/11 when people just wanted to see my big fat Greek wedding. you know, people have different reactions to things. When it was COVID, they wanted to read and watch all the horror they could get. So everything goes in cycles, but horror never goes away.
Yeah. There are so many book companies that said they won't go into superhero stuff because DC and Marvel own that. But yeah. When it comes to horror, they'll do horror all year long because that has a ready-made audience that goes well. And I'm just curious, because of your background in film and television, have you ever thought about taking some of your comics and turning them into movies or TV, and any kind of along those lines?
I just try to make the best comics I can. If somebody else thinks that they're exciting enough to make into a movie, that's great. In terms of if a studio sees them, if they, you know, they're much more into algorithms. So the odds of them making one of these stories, no matter how good, are about how much the sales are internationally. So they'd be more inclined to make one of the comics if it had giant international sales. Mm. And the fact of life is, internationally, the sales will always be run by DC, Marvel. Thank God Boom's getting up there. A little bit Skybound. But for the rest, those won't be the numbers that hedge fund people from New York are going to be looking at and go, this is the next big thing. So for me, it's like I don't have an opposition to doing something else with them. But first and foremost, make it a good comic.
Very wise. That's the best way, I think, to go about it. So that I can't fault you on any of the things you're doing. I think you're doing great stuff. But as somebody who's been around and watched the comics industry for decades and read comics for a long time, I always wonder, you were talking about like the next big thing and stuff like that. The comics industry is wondering what it's going to be when they grow up.
Huh.
You know, and I'm just sort of curious because you've come into it. You know, you're not like me. You haven't read since you were a kid and stuff like that. So you have a different perspective on it. What do you think? Where do you think comics are going to go in the years ahead? Do you have an idea, or are you going to be mystified like the rest of us? I always thought digital comics were going to take over and we wouldn't be buying paper comics anymore. Every Wednesday, we would go to an FTP site and download our comics and we wouldn't be buying paper copies anymore. And that, of course, all got trashed now. Do you have any idea where you think the industry might be headed?
Nope. I don't know where anything in life is headed. I think that, you know, anybody trying to bet on the future is kind of a fool. I think that books are always going to be around because people like to hold them. They like the smell of paper. They like collecting things. Something happened between that era when your mother stuffed your comic books and baseball cards in the attic and everyone forgot about them and nobody cared. And then suddenly one day there was a comic or a baseball card that was worth $100,000. Outside of that, no one cared. So who could have anticipated that? I think that I always felt digital and paper comics could coexist because one could point to the other and you could read ones that you were just curious about or you didn't want to carry a bunch of stuff around when you were traveling. You could read those digitally, and the ones that really intrigued you or that had gorgeous art or something you wanted to collect, you could still have in the long box under your bed. I think that, and then it got interesting that the kids want to scroll everything. So then it became vertical scrolling. Well, that isn't that hard to convert to. But I think that a lot of the publishers and writers haven't adapted to how do you use that vertical scrolling as part of your storytelling. You know, how do you make it different? So as something new comes up, how do you make that part of the art? Because it's all just cavemen around a fire telling stories. Mm-hmm. You just have to figure out what you're going to do with the new tools and still tell stories.
Because I was talking to one of the people that was up high up in the comic company, and he was saying that he decided he wanted to show his daughter a comic and see what she would think of it. And she took her finger and she's swiping it across the page to try to get the page to turn. Mm-hmm. Like as if it's on a screen. And he said, no, this is a comic. You don't do that. Well, I'm not interested if I can't do that, the kid goes. And so we've got to work hard to keep people moving forward with this stuff and understand where they're coming from, too, if we want to get them, because we always need more comics readers and buyers and things like that. So
we need more readers in general. People aren't reading to their kids. They're not challenging their kids, and they're not taking away iPads and cell phones.
Mm-hmm. See, when I grew up, my mom and I had twin brother, and the two of us, she would put each one of us on one side of her, and she would read a comic to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sit there and look at the words, and we said, you know, because we got to the what's that word? What does that mean? And she would explain it to us and stuff. When we got to first grade, they used to take my brother and I around to like third and fourth grades and have us read out of books to people. And they would scream, "He's in first grade. Why can't you read like him?" And I would say, they'd say, "What was the biggest word you understood?" And my brother would say, "Invulnerable."
Oh, wow.
Because Superman was invulnerable to everything except kryptonite and magic. And teacher would look at him like, "Huh?" And they'd ask me, and I'd say Batmobile, because of course Batman's my guy. So we would do that. But here we were, first graders, and they were dragging us all over the school to read so they could shame basically these other kids to try to learn. We were, of course they could tell where we learned because of the words we used. "You're comic readers, aren't you?" "Yeah." "Yeah, well, it's us." And so, but the thing to us is we had high school level language skills in first grade because of the comics that our mom let us read. So I think you're on the right track there. I think we need to do more of that kind of stuff, not less.
It's how I used to teach remedial reading for Head Start when I was in college. And the things I brought in were things to make them excited about how to find out what was inside the book. And I brought in comics, and it worked.
Isn't that great? See, this, I wish more people did that, because we need more comic readers. And I think that Storm King Comics is going to help people, particularly who are interested in horror. I think we need to be out recommending this to people who like horror more and more, because this is the kind of stuff that we need to do. Speaking of which, we know that Fetch, I think book two is what's coming out really soon. Are there other things coming in the months ahead that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, The God List by Steve Niles, I think, comes out in May. That's kind of an interesting one. It's more of a thriller than horror. And, God, what else do we have? I don't have my cheat sheet in front of me with all the release dates. We have another good a vampire book by Sean Mandrake, part of the famous Mandrake family. Her father, Tom Mandrake, amazing artist.
Mm-hmm.
Mother, Jan Dersima, is another artist. Mm. Now the brother's in. I've got all of them working on stuff for me.
Oh, wow.
But she's created something called Blood of the Taken. And we'll have that one out before October. We always have a lot of things that come out before New York Comic Con, which is the first or second week in October each year.
Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite one.
Yeah. And so, and the Death Mask books keep being written. So we're going to have that in the future. And we've got two more little kid books for the real little ones. We got another Stanley and his friends' books, where they're always encountering witches and ghosts and things like that. And then we've got one with a terrible title that we still have to fix. Right now it's called Kit TV, like Kitty TV. But they're cats that help usher people to the afterlife. Ghosts that don't want to go. And, so that's a good one coming in for the small kids.
Wow. That's cool. There's all kinds of great stuff. Now, if of course, the website is stormkingcomics.com.
Yes.
And they've got all kinds of good stuff on there. Are you guys out on, like, social media? Is there places to follow you guys on social media?
Oh, yeah. You can find us on stormkingcomics.com. You can find us on Instagram. Basically, if you say Storm King Comics, you'll find us. If you you can find me on Facebook, Sandy King Carpenter. You can find John's on Director John Carpenter at Facebook. What else have we got? He's the Horror Master on Twitter. I'm SKC. What am I on Instagram? I don't know. I don't write to myself.
Well, I'm sure if we look around, we'll find you out there.
We're on all of that.
Okay. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is, as your website points out, congrats on this being your 10th anniversary for Storm King Comics. How does it feel reaching that milestone?
It was pretty good, since they all figured I'd crash and burn the first year. So, you know, it's kind of shocking.
Wow.
Yeah, it does emphasize we're all getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but sometimes the experience, and you're getting better at everything that you're doing. You're learning and making things even better as you go along. And I think that's what's going on with Storm King Comics. I think you're making this company better and better all the time. So it's at stormkingcomics.com for sure. And the 10th anniversary, so they got good experience at making really good horror and related books. So, Sandy, just congratulations on everything you're doing. Boy, I can't wait to see what you guys are going to do next. So keep it up.
Thank you very much.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
The End of All Terminus is back with this amped up second issue.
Jeff Haas is a longtime comic book nerd and fanboy. As a longtime lover of comics, he prides himself on his complete collections of Sandman and Green Lantern. He's long dreamed of reaching the creative heights of his heroes like Neil Gaiman, Jeff Johns, and Ron Mars. Jeff is also the creator of the graphic novel Sanctus from Arcana Publishing and Malik Reigning Devil from 123 Go. He's also completed the Nightmare Patrol series, which is a 4-issue series available now through Comixology. He is the owner of the Traversing the Stars podcast and publicist to many indie comic creators. And right now, going on and Kickstarter, is The End of All Terminus 1+2, 24 pages each, plus 5 free PDFs. How's it going, Jeff?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good. It's good to talk to you now. People get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough, but this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Saturday, May 4 at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So there, I'll probably say it a couple more times just so people know that. But there's a subtitle that says Submit to Death Science Fiction Epic Space Adventure. And so, so Kickstarter is doing pretty well. As we're talking, we're recording this a little early, of course. Your goal is $1,000. You are looking right at it. So it's not going to be far away. I think that you're actually going to hit that. So that's very good things. Now, as far as things go, now we did talk before. You did the issue one had a Kickstarter. How did that go?
We did well. We hit our first stretch goal, which was really nice. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping to do the same thing for this one. It'd be nice for this one to at least at very least equal what the first one did. Hopefully nice to do better than the first one. But the first one, like I said, we hit our first stretch goal, and we everyone got it got fulfilled. Everyone got their stuff. So it feels pretty good.
Good, good. Well, that's good, because Kickstarter can be a treacherous place to live with some people and stuff like that. So we got to be really careful to make sure we get the word out in time.
Yeah, Kickstarter. It's a gamble every time you do it. It's both very rewarding and very anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm. But once you hit the goal, everything feels better. Yeah. It's just a question of, can you do it? And fingers crossed, you know?
You don't sit there refreshing.
Oh, no, no. I refresh continuously. I'm going to eventually get arthritis in my hands because of it, I'm sure.
Oh, everybody does that, I think. That's not anything unusual for people on Kickstarter to be able to do those sorts of things. So, well, it's once you get the amount raised, then I think you do it less. I think what happens. So
I'm sure I'll calm down if I hit the first stretch goal with the refreshing. But at the moment, Kickstarter is getting quite a few hits from me, probably just refreshing over and over again.
That's okay. That's what happened. Now, I got to ask, the first issue, how soon was that available? It's available already, right? Because you've already got the second one going.
Yeah. The first issue has been available since September. Everyone who backed the first time all have their issues. They all were signed. Everyone got them. Everyone got like a free magnet, Terminus magnet as well. But yeah, everyone, the first one's completely fulfilled.
Wow. Good. Well, that's good to hear. Cause there was one Kickstarter that I backed like 5 years ago and I just got the book a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, Jesus.
And I went, wow. Yeah.
We're fast with that. It is a long turnover. Ours, the second issue won't make it to people probably till September. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our artist Brad Shipp, who's fantastic, has a day job, and being what it is, the day job does come first because obviously that pays the bills more than comic book at the moment. Oh, yeah. But it will be fulfilled September, just like the first one was, and hopefully people, I think people will enjoy it.
So it's like an annual. The book comes out kind of once a year.
For now. I mean, as the book makes more money, becomes more profitable, it'd be nice to move over to maybe like every 6 months and then quicker than that as the book keeps building. But for now, being what the artist gets paid, it only makes sense to do it around his work schedule right now.
Well, reality gets in the way of comics.
It always does, unfortunately.
Yeah, sometimes. So,
I mean, if there was no reality, we wouldn't need Kickstarter. I'd be spending money with the money that grows off the trees in the backyard.
Yeah, unfortunately, that doesn't really happen. Why don't we talk about... since the first book's been out for a while, what can you tell us about the first issue that maybe you couldn't tell us before?
All right. Well, the first issue basically is almost more or less a prologue, introducing the characters that they're going to be introduced to, all seven species. As for those who might not have seen the first interview, basically what happens is the universe is being torn apart by something called the Great Rip, which is, in this particular case, if you want to argue physics, is overwhelming force of dark energy, pulling everything apart. And the last seven species have boarded this, a spaceship called the Terminus and are trying to exit the universe, go beyond our borders. In my opinion, the universe does have an endpoint. There's some thought that it does. I'm saying that I'm on team border endpoint. And they're trying to escape out to see what lies beyond our universe.
Okay.
The first issue ends with a landing on the planet of darkness. Demanded for supplies, and there are these creatures that live on the planet. Not too unlike an idea from, if you like the movie Aliens, they're kind of like the Xenomorphs a little bit, somewhat similar. Except for the acid, they don't have acid blood, but they do have something else that's going to affect the story for issues to come.
Okay.
And it ends with the beginning of the big standoff between the aliens and our heroes.
Okay. Okay, now, since other people may not have heard the original interview, why don't we talk about the other characters? Because I know there's new ones. I want to talk about those. But let's talk about the other ones. The first one, I think, is the president, Ada Lamar, intelligent former soldier who's learning to navigate the complexities of diplomacy among the disparate species aboard her ship. And if you go to the Kickstarter page, you get to see a drawing of her, which is very nice.
Yeah, she's the leader of the human species. She captains the ship, but she's also the leader of the Terminus. She is on the younger side, maybe late 20s, early 30s. She was brought into power or voted by the other species to lead. Now, the question is, was she voted because she's a great leader, or was she brought in because she is younger and the other species do believe that she can be manipulated to their side of things or be pushed around? And this is the first issue, and the second issue is her learning to stand her ground and deciding if she's going to allow herself to be pushed around like she was in the first issue, or is she going to stand up and, you know, and be the leader she needs to be. And the first and second issue is her being in transition to actually being a leader, and making her own choices.
Okay. Was she a leader before the Terminus, or has it not just happened now that she's on the Terminus?
As the ship was going to be launched from Earth, there was a determination of who was going to make it to the ship, because most of the, not every human is allowed, was going to able to make it on the ship for obvious reasons, too many people. She was selected to be the captain of the ship and to be the leader of the Terminus.
Okay, so well, that's good. So she's got some background and training as being a leader, or is this kind of off the cuff?
She was in the military. She was a military hero, but she has never been the leader of many people. She would be, you know, the leader of her, you know, of the soldier that she was in charge of at that moment, but she wasn't like a general. She wasn't like had any major political power. She was a soldier.
Okay.
Though, you know, a decent ranked one, but she still was a soldier.
Okay. So she's person basically the captain of the ship as well as the person in charge of the humans.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. If we can, let's go down the other aliens, because I think that I think it's good for people to know. And on the web page on the Kickstarter, the second group, well, second person is, let's see if I can pronounce this right.
Thraxis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Says he's the leader of a warrior race of cat-like aliens, is bold and arrogant, but also a fierce warrior who's dedicated to his people. He's a hero, but only if he doesn't kill everyone who pisses him off. And then you have a drawing of him, too. So we get to see him there in the middle of stuff. How many of his race is called, do we have a name for the race?
They're the Gedadakians.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. I'm not sure.
Oddly enough, all the words, I can't remember exactly where that one come from, but every word, every name of the species, it comes from, it's usually a play on another word or usually from an older language. I can't remember exactly where I got Gedadakians from, but it is an historical word. I can't remember where it came from, though. It's been too many years. But Thraxis is, for me, my favorite character. He's smart, and he's far more eloquent with his speech than you would think from when you would meet his people. But he's also the biggest ass kicker on the team. He's very short fused. He's more, at least he's just as likely potentially to kill everyone on the ship as he is to save them all, depending on his mood. But he's a fascinating character. If when I get to issue 3, 4, and 5, I focus a lot more on Thraxis as well. A little bit from the pre-story about how they all came together, and Thraxis is a fantastic character.
There's a drawing that shows a picture of him, and he's saying, "What will it be, landing or mutiny?"
Yeah,
he's talking to Ada apparently.
Ada is under does not want to land on this planet. She feels everything. There's enough supplies to keep going. There's no need to stop. Thraxis is basically demanding find the first planet that might have supplies on, you know, life, things to eat, and land. And he's forcing her hand at the moment and pushing her into landing. Like I said, this is going to be the moment when President Lamar is going to realize that she can't be pushed around. She can't allow herself to be pushed around by her crew and the other species. And like I said, Thraxis is a big dude. He's like 7 feet tall, but President Lamar is going to have to be able to stare him down and put him in his place. And that's going to be her challenge going forward.
Okay. All right. So, like, what is it about him that you like so much?
He's a fun character, right? Like I said, you read the first issue. He's a fun character. Funny, smart, a bit of an ass, but that's kind of also what makes him entertaining. And he is, like I said, as a warrior, he does kick some ass, and he's a lot of fun to write. And he's one of the characters, as I was writing him, he became more and more interesting, and he's taken up more and more oxygen in the comic book because he's so interesting to write.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Sound good. Now, the next person on the website says that Sela, the leader of the plant-like species, is wise and patient. President Lamar often seeks his guidance, although his collectivist viewpoint often clashes with her need to protect the individuals on board. And he's the Lorelians. Is that the name of the group?
Exactly. These are Lorelian. As actually, I pronounce it Sela, but I mean, these are not real words. So you can pronounce however you want. He's the leader of the Lorelians, which is sort of like space ants on some level. Like I said, he's extremely wise. He's lived a while. However, his view, because of his, you know, his long life and also the view of his species, is a very macro view of things. His view, when things go wrong on the planet, which they will, especially at the end of the first issue, beginning of and most of the second issue, is macro. The crew is the most important thing. The ship is most important. If you, if they're in danger, no point. You can't risk more to save them. You leave them. You keep going. Protect the ship. And obviously, Lamar is not going to follow that. She, you know, you save every crew member matters. You got to save everybody. Like every soldier can't leave anybody. You don't leave anybody behind. But Sela is more big picture. You got to protect the crew. Got to protect the species. And he's trying to push Lamar to keep going.
Okay. Now, I meant to ask the last one, but I'll go back and ask that. How many Lorelians are there on the ship?
I will say I don't have an exact figure, but it would be approximately 2,000 to 3,000.
Okay. Wow. So this is a big ship. Now
it's a massive ship.
So how many of the cat-like aliens are there?
Once again, very similar numbers. Except for the humans, which are obviously, are because they launched from Earth, are far more populous on it, because they're also majority of the crew manning the Terminus, as well as the people who are being transported, are the humans. So there's many more of them. The only species that has very few, there's the Alpha and Beta are the only ones of their species, the Zorakians, because they're clone species. You only need really two, one primary and one redundancy. Because once they get to wherever they will land or find, once they leave the universe, they will just consistently clone their species and kind of repopulate that way. But everyone else, for the most part, you're talking about anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000, depending on the species. Humans with a lot more on for humans, and then the two clones.
Okay, so it says on here, believing in their own genetic perfection has made them pariahs among the crew with the Zorakians.
Zorakians, they're not well liked. Alpha is a jerk. He's a serious. I don't know if he's lame, but he's a huge dick. No one likes him. Even Beta doesn't like him very well of his own species. He's very superior in how he talks to individuals. Basically. From the perspective that they come from, they're not too much different than the Link, and as far as they believe that they've reached genetic perfection. And once you think yourself as genetically perfect, everyone else is beneath you. And that's kind of where it comes from.
Right. Okay. Now, you mentioned the Link. Let's talk about the Link. I can read this here if you want. It says, the Link is a species of numerous technological life forms that share a hive-like mind. They believe themselves to be the superior species. Everybody thinks they're superior species, due to their intelligence and technological advancement. They value organic life only out of their current necessity to their existence.
Right. Yeah. And the point, you are correct, that every species does view themselves as being the one that should survive. They're the ones that matter. Mm-hmm. And it's not too much like the arrogance of humans. We all view ourselves as being the most important species on the planet. We view ourselves that way, right? Mm-hmm. These aliens view themselves for their own reasons as that way as well. That's why there's so much conflict and problems on the ship, because each individual species do feel that they're the ones who should survive, but they need the others for now. But if ever the situation came where they didn't, obviously they would be viewing themselves as being one that must survive. But they do it for different reasons. The clone views themselves as genetically superior. The Link views themselves as being superior because they are this computerized, they're technological advanced. They believe themselves to have reached beyond the boundaries of organic life. And for that reason, why they feel them, and because they do share that hive kind of mind, they view that as being superior as well. They don't have that individuality that causes weakness in people, that causes strife in our species and every other species. They view it as being, they are of one mind, they are one opinion, and they are, because of their technology, they view themselves as being superior for that reason. But every species views them for some reason as their being the one worthy of making it out. But like I said, it's not too different from humans. I would imagine in this same scenario, humans would probably view themselves as being the species that matters. We're all self-important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a group called the Acolytes of Devoe?
The Acolytes of Devoe. They're basically sort of like faith Catholics on some level. They are a religious cult who believe in the god Devoe. The entire species is devoted to believing in this one faith. They all view themselves for religious purposes as being superior because of their faith. They're the only ones with the correct faith in a god. Mm-hmm. Thus, they are the chosen people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where they come from.
They're led by Pope Pius Gadol.
Yep.
Okay, so that's something to see. Really interesting about that. And then there's a group called the Paragon.
The Paragon. Is that a lot I can say to them without ruining who they are? Mm-hmm. For the most part, for much of the series, they're going to be tertiary characters. They seem very meek. They seem they're quiet. They are always, there tends to be seen often in the background of stories and pages and things of that nature. But there's definitely more going on with them. There's a reason they're in the story. And that's going to come up later in the series. I can't spoil too much about them right now.
Okay, well, that's good. It's good to have some mystery. Oh, is it something like, now, there are some new characters in this book, at least two that I saw on a page, yep. I think. There's a pilot, Orville Yeager.
Yes.
Talk about him. What's his deal? We don't see him in the first issue, right?
He's on the first issue. He shows up in the second issue as Lamar does determine to rescue those on the planet. And he's a mission to rescue who's there. He knows the danger on that planet. He knows the odds of surviving is extremely small. But that's kind of the point with them. He is, in many ways, one of the more pure heroes in the story, in the series. He's going to do the right thing. He's going to save them or try to save them because that's the right thing to do. Because he's confident in himself. He does view himself as being an expert pilot, a tough, kind of views himself as a bit of a badass, and he will do this. And anyone who in the shuttle who does not have his strength, he's going to put them in their place very quickly. Mm-hmm. But he is an out and out heroic figure, at least very least in his mind.
Mm-hmm. And the other new character is the head of security, right?
Nakano.
Yeah.
Nakano is the head of security on the ship. She's one of the few people on the ship that aren't, that's not afraid of Thraxis. And he's a few non-Gadakians that Thraxis actually respects because she is strong. She is extremely smart. She is quick on her thoughtful on her feet, and she knows how to take care of herself. And for that reason, she has the respect of Thraxis, which likes a few non-individuals of his species he does have respect for, and she becomes increasingly important, and she's someone who Lamar will start increasingly have the air of. She'll have the air for Lamar as well. And like I said, she's a good character. I had a lot of fun writing her in the second issue, and she's one of those characters as well who, as I'm writing series, writing the issue, I thought to myself, she needs more space as well.
Mm. Okay, now one thing too we should point out on the Kickstarter page, you've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 pages of artwork from, looks like issue 2,
yep.
Which is good. And then you've also got some covers, a Star Wars homage cover. There's one cover that worries me a little bit. It looks like the Terminus is crash landing for some reason.
That's the shuttle that crashed. The group who lands on the planet, something happens on the way down, and it does in fact crash, which is why they can't fly up in the original in the first shuttle. Mm-hmm. So that is that's the first shuttle on the Terminus, and it does crash on the way down.
Now, in your little audio video thing, that you mentioned that not everybody is going to survive. And, of course, we don't be spoiled on that, but I would imagine some of the people on the shuttle may not survive.
There is a lot of death in the second issue. There's a major death at the end of the second issue. A major character dies already at the end of the second issue. That sets the stage for the next issues that come after. The goal is that this is basically going to be a ship of, including the humans, probably between 80 to 200,000 individuals. My guess is, some of this is going to be tweaked, but it's basically going to be about 12 survivors at the end.
Okay. All right. And there's another, we get to see, I guess, a little bit about the villains on the planet. They kind of look shark-like in a way.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And one of them is slashing and hacking at them. And that's one of the covers. I did get a kick out of the Dan Price Bigfoot Knows Karate mashup cover. Because I talked to him on this podcast one time, which I enjoyed. So I'm kind of, this is just sort of a artistic license type of a thing. The Bigfoot is not on the ship.
No, Bigfoot Knows Karate is nowhere near the ship. He's not in the series. Mm-hmm. But I know Dan Price is a friend of mine. I worked with him a bit, and I'm a big fan of Bigfoot Knows Karate, and I asked him if he would do a mashup cover for me with Thraxis and Bigfoot Knows Karate, and he was happy to do so. And, you know, back in my head, I would love to see that fight happen, because I think those characters would definitely be entertaining against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he did kill it with that mashup cover. I really enjoyed it.
So who is it that Bigfoot is fighting?
It's Thraxis.
Oh, it is Thraxis. Okay. Oh, okay. That's good. Good to know. So that would be an interesting fight. So that would be something really good to see.
Yeah, Thraxis, in my opinion, would win, but I'm sure Dan would disagree.
Now, I got to ask, let's see, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 covers. Or six covers.
Six covers total.
Yeah, so you can order them separately?
Yeah, you can get the different covers. You can buy all six for, I think I had that down at like $32, or you can buy them individually. A couple of them I think I actually have as add-ons, but you can just get the issue as well.
Mm. Okay, very good, very good. All kinds of good stuff going on. You've also got Cheers to Terminus for $30. You get one of the pictured mugs.
Yes.
Which shows the ship on there. Who drew the ship?
That's Brad Ship.
So it is, okay. All right, it's a good choice for that. All physical copies, 1 and 2 prints, bulk discount. I always get a kick out of it being called "The End Is Here."
Yeah,
because I am always remembering Final Fantasy or Final something or other. Whenever they have Final Fantasy 2 and Final Fantasy 3, and I'm always going like, how can that be Final Fantasy 3? So, but anyway, this is all one story. And so all kinds of good things going on with it. And so, yeah, as we're talking, you're doing quite well. You're just about to get that goal. And I'm looking forward to that. You said there is a stretch goal?
The first stretch goal, I believe I said at $1,500 or $1,600, it's going to be keychains. At $2,000, there's going to be a Thraxis backup story, where you learn a little bit of the origin of Thraxis, how he became the leader of his species, of his people. At $3,000, originally $3,000 was going to be a color stretch goal, but I'll announce for the first time on the show, I am moving to color on the series. Mm. There is going to be, the series will be turned to color for the second issue.
Really? Because the pages that I see here are black and white.
Yep. They originally were going to black and white, but as I was talking to some colorist, mm-hmm. I met one that I was very impressed with, and we spoke, and she agreed to do color, do it for color, and I decided a little last minute, after the launch, actually, when I decided that I wanted to move to color.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good, because there is a little bit of color in there. When the plant people talk, their word balloons are green.
Yep.
And there's other things that go on that are color in there, too. I guess we shouldn't spoil all that stuff, but there's a lot of interesting stuff on there, which I think is really good about that. So this is really good. Of course, I love science fiction, so to me, I think this is going to be one of those great stories that I get a kick out of, because I'm always a Star Trek guy, and so I like stories like this where we have different races all intermingling and interacting. And I always love that the people for the longest time said that the Klingons couldn't possibly be on a starship because they were brutal things. And also they said Cardassians couldn't do it. I had a big argument with an author. This lady was writing Star Trek books, and she said, "Oh no, the Cardassians couldn't possibly join Starfleet." I said, "Do you like the Klingons?" Well, that's different. And so, I'm always enjoying when different races interact, because that's when we get to learn a lot about them and how they interact.
I will say Star Trek was a big influence on me. I'm a big fan of Star Trek. For anyone who reads The Terminus, if people pick up the issue. The Gadadakians are sort of Klingon-ish. I mean, there's definitely, if you want to look for direct inspiration, they're very much the Klingons of my story. The Link is sort of the Borg on some level. Mm-hmm. There's definitely influence from Star Trek, because I love the series. So, I'm stealing a little bit of it.
So are there going to be new characters coming on every issue, or was that just unique to issue two?
There's going to be a new character coming up in the third issue. He's a kind of old school detective, mm-hmm. and he's going to solve the big murder that happens at the end of the second issue.
Okay. Because you talked about the fact that this is a large ship with a lot of people on it. Yep. You know, I always got a kick out. One of the things I never liked about Star Trek was that usually everybody that we met on the ship were all on the bridge, and other people, maybe we'd see the chief medical officer or maybe the engineer, but there was a ship full of people walking all over the place that we never got to meet.
Yeah.
And just, are these people obviously must be on the ship.
Yeah. Like you said, it's nice when you don't have to pay anyone for to be cast, you know. So you can have a much bigger crew of characters. But as the series develops, there's going to be other characters involved. So the third issue has a new character involved. We're going to meet another primary Gadadakian in the fourth issue as they develop more. You see a little bit more of them as a species and how they functioned as a crew or as a group prior to the Terminus. Like I said, the issue 3, 4, and 5 backtracks a little bit and kind of gives you some of the backstory about where how this all came about. But there's still the main story will still be moving through it, but there'll be mm-hmm. flashbacks and things of that nature that will introduce them, and there'll be new characters because of it.
Okay. Now I got to ask a question about the pilot, because of the drawing. He's human, right?
He is human.
Okay. He's got like a visor on.
Yes.
Is the visor... Is there a reason why he's wearing the visor?
Well, he's a pilot. Mm-hmm. There's things in the visor that helps to calculate things such as speed and vectors and things of that nature.
Okay, very good, very good. So, okay, this is, I gotta say this again, because people, they always want me to say it every so often. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Saturday, May 4 at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So obviously you've got everything all planned out as far as where we're going from here. So is there as far as people who want to keep up with news and stuff as it becomes available, is there any kind of social media thing for Terminus that you update?
For Terminus, you can follow me on Facebook, Jeff Haas. You can find me on X, I guess Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter anymore. on Twitter. I post Instagram somewhat regularly. And you know, there'll be updates as we get closer. Hopefully we get closer. But yeah, so that's basically that's where my recommendations would go to. If you want to follow me, go to follow me on X under J Haas Interviews. Follow me on Facebook under Jeff Haas. There is a Terminus Facebook page as well, so you can go to the End of All Terminus, and that's Brad Ship the artist tends to be the one who posts the most to it.
Okay.
That one.
All right, very good. So this will be good. So we can expect to see the second issue in September, sounds like. So are there other projects that you all are working on right now, or is this kind of keeping you busy?
In the world of comic books right now, that's what I'm keeping to. Unfortunately, I can only afford one anxiety-inducing project at a time. I do have the podcast, which keeps me busy the other majority of the time. And then obviously my day job. So, I will say, for comic books, it's this right now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about your podcast, for a while. If people want tell people the name of the podcast again,
Traversing the Stars podcast.
Okay. So you interview stars basically.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay. So how do you come across the stars and stuff like that? Because obviously you get people to be on the podcast, but you also, because I work with you to help get people onto my podcast from comics and stuff like that. Sure. How do you find these other people and stuff like that? Have you developed a network and work with people to find these stars?
Most of them I go through their publicists and their managers. So it's mostly through tons and tons and tons of emails, mostly some through Facebook. Some I reach out to through social media, other forms of social media. But for the most part, it's emailing. It's just emailing their manager and the publicist and just making request after request after request. And, you know, you send out 100 emails. Maybe I'll land 15 to 20 of them. Hmm. So it's basically just a numbers game for me. And I've had some good luck. I mean, just recently, yesterday, I interviewed Robert Wall. Mm-hmm. You know him at Alexander Knox in Batman. He was mm-hmm. in Bull Durham. He was in a bunch of stuff. So we talked baseball. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's a huge baseball fan. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Julian Richings from Supernatural. He played Death on Supernatural. Mm-hmm. And then Star Trek. I interview Star Trek people all the time. Mm-hmm. I had Armin Shimerman on a couple of times. Mm-hmm. John Billingsley was recently on. Martha Hackett, who was Seska in Voyager.
Right.
Gabriel Ruiz from Star Trek Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. Will Whedon I've had on the show before. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Is there any Star Trek person that you're trying to get and you hope to get that you haven't gotten yet?
If I ever get a hold of them, Andrew Robinson would be a big goal of mine.
Oh, he's great. He's such a funny fella. I get such a huge kick out of him. He has an audio book out.
Yes.
That might be the way to get it. Say, hey, you want to advertise your audio book? Come on here and do it. He actually wrote the book and then he went back and narrated it.
Yeah. Like I said, he's been a dream guest. I've reached out to him a few times. He doesn't have a whole lot of, he doesn't really push interviews apparently. No, he doesn't do a lot of those. But I've reached out a handful of times. I've been trying to get him on the show, but at the moment he's been too busy apparently, but which is fine. I mean, anyone who comes on the show is a gift to have. Mm-hmm. But Andrew Robinson is up there as the ones I want. I'd love to get Walter Koenig, as he gets there up there in age. I'd love to get him on the show. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, I'm a Star Trek fan, so I mean, I'd be happy to have everyone. I mean, I had Tim Russ on the show. That was fantastic. And Robert Picardo mm-hmm. from Voyager. But I would love to have the rest of the crew. I mean, you know, if Kate McGrew is watching the show, reach out. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to have that one.
The one I would love to talk to, even because there is a comic book based on it, would be Strange New Worlds as Captain. Because that whole the Ansem Out and Pike, yeah, and that whole business to me is just fascinating. Because here's this guy that's so different from anybody else that's in Star Trek. He knows his future, and that to me is so unlike anybody else. The rest of the people, we have no idea what's going to happen to them. He knows, and boy, is that a problem for him. So I would love to talk with him about that. I would enjoy that.
I got to meet him at a convention. I got his autograph, and he's a cool guy. I mean, Strange New Worlds is a great show. I did get to interview a few people from that show. So a few of the directors, a few of the actors, but I would love him to do it. What's his name? The guy who plays Peck. I can't remember his first name.
Ethan Peck. Ethan Peck.
Yeah. I'd be happy to talk to him anytime. The guy who plays the doctor, I can't remember his name, but he'd be a great one to interview as well. There's so many. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if I could, I'd just be like interviewing people from Star Trek every week, you know, if I could.
Nope. Join the club. I wouldn't have a problem with that either, because I just Star Trek to me is one of those great things. I mean, I enjoy Star Wars, but yeah. Star Trek is the thing that I am most interested in because it makes me think.
And that's the reason I wrote The Terminus. I mean, there was only so many times I could watch see comic books on Kickstarter, you know, basically girls with big boobs and no story. Yeah. Before I thought to myself, let's do something a little, you know, elevated from that. And that's what I learned. But the idea of the elevation of it comes from a love of Star Trek. And I will say, growing up, I was a big Star Wars fan first. But as I got older, it's become Star Trek over Star Wars.
I think that may be true of a lot of people.
It is in many ways just so much more potential in Star Trek for just smarter stories and an exploration of sci-fi. Well, thing with Star Wars, and I love Star Wars, not much as I used to, but I love Star Wars, is that what it has to say, it has basically been said. It's just a re-exploration of those ideas. Star Trek, because of its how it's made, and because it's a series and mostly not movies, is that it allows for exploration of different ideas every episode. Something new to say.
Well, I'm just sort of curious, though. When Terminus is finally complete, when you've gotten to that place, have you got other stories that you'd like to tell?
Yes. There's a lot in my pocket that I would like to get to. They're not science fiction. Some of them are. One of them's more. Two of them actually are more in the superhero genre. Though, got to tread lightly on that one because that is kind of an overplayed genre, but. I think I have some things I can say about it that are a little different. There's a short story that's sort of like a ghost story I wanted to tell. A few others, but at the moment, Terminus is absorbing the oxygen in the room for comic books, and unfortunately, I don't have the budget to deal with more than one at a time at the moment.
That's why you Kickstarter.
And like I said, the faster people can back it. The faster I can go on that. And if people back it enough, maybe I will have the time, money, and energy to push into one of my other series as well, which it would be nice. But
I've seen people actually, you know, do a Kickstarter and they make enough money. Instead of doing one issue, they can afford to do two.
Oh, yeah. It'd be nice. I mean, a few that I've, supported, they do two at a time. But once again, you're talking is a much... It's a gamble. Every time you do something else, it's a gamble. Yeah. At the time of the second issue, I'm not ready to gamble that deep yet in it. And also, I'm not sure how fast Brad could turn around those pages if we did do it that way. Like I said, it would have to be enough money that he could take a time out from his day job. And, it's hard. It's hard to afford to walk away from a day job at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Comics, unfortunately, they don't necessarily pay the bills. So,
no.
Now, I do have a question for you. You said issue two is going to be color now, right?
Yes.
What about issue one? Are you going to go back and color that, or are you going to leave it the way it was?
I mean, I don't know if there's a demand for it. I mean, at the moment, being my second issue, I'm not sure what the demand looks like. In any way, shape, or form for any of the things I'm doing for first or second issue. I'm going to try the second issue in color. If the demand is there and people are like, hey, suddenly they're jumping on and they're backing it and they're like, color, fantastic. And there's a demand for it in the first issue. I guess I could always go back. I mean, it's possible. But it's of course at the same time where people might not care. They might be like, hey, the black and white was just fine. I don't really care either way. I'm going to make the color version is going to be an option.
Okay. I was just talking with one creator who just went back and got the first several issues. She went back and made a hardcover collection of it. And you know, I'm always thinking that's a way, you know, and of course, Kickstarter is always a way to do these kinds of things. And I was just thinking that maybe the time has come, maybe when you actually, should you get around to doing a collected edition, maybe that's the time. To do a first issue in color.
Yeah. It all depends on the band. I mean, for all I know, it's hard to know what people want and don't want. It'd be nice to, if the second, like I said, the color makes the difference and people are clamoring for it, I'll do it for the first one as well. But like I said, it might be possible that there is no difference and people like the gray scale just as much as they like the color version. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, either way, I don't care. I mean, I like the grayscale. Mm-hmm. You know, I look forward to seeing the color pages as well, but mm-hmm. I like the grayscale. I'm good. As far as I'm concerned, I like having the story there. And mm-hmm. if it becomes color and that's what people like better, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm going to have them on the Kickstarter, same together. So people, you know, if it's weighted way more on one side than the other, obviously that's something that I'm taking into consideration. If everyone is, if they're basically even, I don't know, I'll make a decision of whether or not I want to continue just with color. It's a little bit of, I'm in kind of an exploration phase of okay. the series right now, as far as that stuff goes.
Okay. Well, if people want you to go color, they can always back the project and let you know that they would like to see that first issue in color. So, you know, that's something they can always do. Let you know. I guess when the time comes, you'll decide whether you want to collect the issues at a certain point or not.
The idea would be at the fifth issue, I would do the first volume. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm taking this one issue at a time right now, as far as the plan.
Okay.
And it's for the people out there to tell me what, you know, if it's something they want to keep like that. You know, as much as I enjoy doing it myself, I don't want to write just for myself. I want people to actually want to read the comic book. Mm-hmm. And as long as they do want to, I'll, you know, keep producing and make sure they have their story. Mm-hmm. If it turns out there's not the demand, then that's something to consider as well.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good to be flexible because you just never know with comics these days. Sometimes number one comes out and everybody goes, oh, wow, number one, big collectors going nuts and grab every issue they can. And number two comes out, not so much. Number three, not so much.
it can happen that way. You know, it'd be nice to make tons of money. I mean, like I said, there's a part of my brain that's like, hey, let's do one of those naughty covers that people love to spend money on. But at the same time, it's not true to the story. It wouldn't be true to the character. So I'm not going to do it. But, you know, it's, you know, but I get that stuff too. If people do whatever you need to do to make their money on Kickstarter.
Yep. I have to say that I'm not much for naughty covers or books.
No, I'm not. But they do seem to be easy money.
Oh, man. One guy was, because my roommate, Richard Rivera, was doing Stabby Bunny. And this one artist came to him, and he spent the whole dinner trying to convince him to do a naughty version of Stabby Bunny, which was about a young girl, a very young girl, 8-year-old girl and stuff like that. And we were going, I don't think we should do that. Oh, but just think how much it would sell. You'd make all those kinds of money and blah, 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 blah. And we'd be just kind of looking at him going, no. Mm-mm. Not doing it. Yeah, so,
I like I said, there's definitely money to be made on those type of covers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of my brain that said, make the easy money and do something like that.
Mm.
Then I thought to myself, do you really want to be that? That's the reason why someone you sold your comic book, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. You know, and that may change. You may decide to tell a whole story that is that genre and stuff like that should the time come. But science fiction, I would rather it be thoughtful rather than suggestive.
I agree. Which is pretty much why I didn't do something like that. Like, the character, like President Lamar, would be the obvious choice.
Mm.
But the thought to myself is, no, that's not true. That's not fair to the character.
Mm.
It's, I don't think, you know, you create a strong woman character that would undermine the very concept of the character.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, it's going to cost money. Obviously, you lose money that way. But at the same time, I think there's a certain, I don't know, ethics involved in being and not mistreating your character.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, once again, the last time, this project will be funded for Reaches the Goal by Saturday, May 4, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The goal is $1,000. And as we're talking, you're right on the verge of it. And I have a feeling you're going to get that hopefully even before this interview posts. And again, it's on Kickstarter under The End of All, Terminus 1 plus 2, 24 pages each, plus 5 free PDFs. So I tell you, Jeff, this is good stuff. I love science fiction. You could do science fiction all day long, and I would be wanting to read it. So I think this is good stuff. And all I can tell you is keep it up and keep doing wonderful stuff, and you know, have fun doing it. That's the whole point of this. And I can tell that you're already enjoying it. So all I can say is just keep it up.
Well, thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.